Well, there's no question that wind power is increasing and growing here in Wisconsin. Dozens of large-scale wind turbines, some of them as tall as 20-story buildings, are being built in the eastern part of the state. And I think we now rank 15th nationally in terms of wind installation. And that makes it the fifth fastest growing state in the country in terms of wind installations. I'm going to be talking about wind power in Wisconsin and elsewhere today with Jeff Anthony, manager of utility programs with the American Wind Energy Association. It's the national trade association with more than 1,900 member companies. And it hosts the world's largest wind power trade show, which is coming up at McCormick Place in Chicago starting Monday, May 4th, and running through the 7th. And I know we have many companies involved in that. I know Governor Doyle is going to take part in a panel discussion on wind power during the show. We'd certainly look forward to hearing from you as we visit with Jeff about wind power. If you have some questions about it, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. Jeff Anthony with us by phone. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Sure thing, Larry. Thanks for having me on your show today.
So wind power is really growing fast here in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. Wisconsin had about 53 megawatts installed for pretty much the past 6 years, or the 6 years prior to last year, 2008. And so we've seen a jump in wind power installations in 2008 and into early 2009. So Wisconsin, as you mentioned, is one of the faster-growing states in the U.S. I think Indiana right now is the fastest-growing.
You know, I think every farm in Wisconsin at one point had a windmill on it, and you still see them around the state, the old farm windmills. But they differ quite a bit from the new turbines in terms of capturing energy from the wind.
That's correct. Windmills that pump water are relatively straightforward devices, smaller scale. And as you noted before, the largest modern wind turbines are much more complex machinery, typically around 8,000 different piece parts and components in a modern utility-scale wind turbine. And the generation of electricity from wind turbines is becoming very much of a mainstream generating technology, with projects being installed all over the United States.
And just to kind of as an aside to that, I know during Wind Power, which is the name of the trade show, I know there are some free job fairs and career fairs, wind seminars, if you will.
That's correct. As we look towards the future of wind power, we look very closely at some of the constraints that could inhibit the growth of wind power in the U.S. We look at both the transmission system as well as some of the piece parts, the commodities that go into the wind turbines. We've done a lot of work on kind of the supply chain, but we're also looking very closely at the jobs and the workforce. So there's a strong effort on our industry's part that we're kind of facilitating on behalf of the wind energy industry to really promote the potential for jobs growth in this area. The wind industry now employs 85,000 people in direct jobs related to the wind energy industry, and that's an increase of 35,000 jobs just during last year, during calendar 2008, but we need even more in the future. So the job fair being conducted next week at our annual conference on May 5, 6, and 7 will have a lot of activities, a lot of companies who are gearing up, kind of anticipating a burst of energy, if you will, mm-hmm. Once the industry comes out of the current economic slowdown. We expect 2010 to be a huge year for growth, both in terms of projects and employment.
Well, a number of callers to visit with you, so let's go to the phones. And Mike in Castle Rock is up first. Mike, hi to you. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I'd like to know what the cost per windmill is, the maintenance to keep it running, and what the payback is for the utility companies and, for folks like me.
All right.
Very good question, Mike. Typically, wind turbines run about $2,000, maybe $2,200 per kilowatt. So that's a fully installed cost. So that's not just the cost of the turbines itself, but that's all the support equipment, the roads to access the turbines. You know, that's the entire project, everything wrapped up. For the turbines itself, you know, you're probably talking about $1 million to $1.5 million per megawatt. So some of the larger turbines going in the United States are typically on the order of 1.5 kilowatts, maybe up to 2.1 kilowatts. So you're talking, you know, $3-4 million per turbine installed. Your other question, in terms of the payback, you know, a lot of people who might put up a residential scale turbine for their property or on their farm would certainly be concerned about the payback in terms of, you know, when would they recoup their investment. It really doesn't apply, that kind of payback question, to the larger projects, because the bottom line there is what is the cost of electricity from that project. So for a utility who's putting up large-scale project or buying the output from a large-scale, utility-scale wind project that someone else is going to be responsible for constructing and installing, the bottom line really isn't a payback question. It's what's the price of electricity that I'm going to get from that wind turbine, and how does it compare to other options? And in that case, you're probably talking somewhere between 6 cents and 9 cents per kilowatt hour, which may not mean a lot to anyone who doesn't follow this pretty closely, but that's a fairly cost-competitive price to other forms of generation. If you compare it to, say, a coal plant that's been around for 20 years, obviously that's a fully depreciated generating unit, so it's going to be cheaper to get electricity. But when you compare wind power to other options for building new generation, wind power fares pretty well. It's a pretty cost-competitive, even though prices have gone up in the past 2 or 3 years with steel prices and just general price of commodities increasing. The same thing applies to pretty much any type of new generation of electricity. So all costs have unfortunately risen in the past 3 years for any type of new generation. And wind is pretty cost competitive with anything else that you'd be building right now.
Okay. All right. Mike, thank you very much for calling. So if you're building, let's say you have for your home, you're going to build a wind situation here, install a wind generator, electricity generator through wind. What would you need to, say, run a home?
Yeah, if you're going to run a home, you're probably talking, you're going to need, probably a 20 or 30 kilowatt machine. It all depends on where you install that machine. And do you have a really good wind resource or do you have a really poor resource? So much is dependent on exactly where you're placing that wind turbine, you know, geographically in the state, but also what's your local terrain around your farm or business or home. You know, if there's a lot of trees there, it's probably not a very good place to put a wind turbine because trees wreak havoc with the wind resource and really can destroy a good, wind regime over the period of a year. It also obviously depends on how much electricity you use. Many people like to point out that the first and foremost thing you probably want to do is get more energy efficient. So reducing the amount of electricity used in the first place is always a best first step before you start thinking about putting solar panels on your house or a wind turbine nearby.
Yep, that's right. Thanks, Mike. Terry in Green Bay, we'll go to you now. Hi, Terry.
Hi, just curious as to how fast the turbines are going up. What's the birth rate? And so what's the prediction of how many we're going to have in Wisconsin a year from now, 5 years from now, et cetera? I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks for calling.
It's a good question. You know, typically the blades are spinning for the largest wind turbines somewhere around 14 or 18 revolutions per minute. So it's a much leisurely rotational speed than maybe what people are used to seeing in some older and smaller turbines that tend to spin more quickly and look more like, say, a box fan in your window or something. The larger turbines typically are on the order of 14 to 18 revolutions per minute. That still means, because the blades are quite long, that a tip speed, in other words, the very tips of the blade, you're still moving through the air at about 140 miles an hour or something on that order. In terms of how many turbines we expect to see in Wisconsin, it's really hard to predict at this point. We just don't know how fast we're going to see wind turbines go up in this state compared to other states. Some of the utilities are building projects in Wisconsin to serve Wisconsin electric load. A couple utilities have looked outside. Once you get just west of the Mississippi River into some of our neighboring states like Minnesota and Iowa, you do get a better wind resource. And so the prospects for cost-competitive wind energy produced from some of those plants tend to be slightly higher and more cost-effective. Currently, there's a requirement in this state. It's called a Renewable Electricity Standard, also formerly known as a Renewable Portfolio Standard. that requires the state as a whole to reach 10%, and that's kind of divided up amongst all the utilities at different ratios. But essentially, the current goal is to get 10% of our electricity in Wisconsin from renewable energy, and wind energy occupies and will provide the majority of electrons, the majority of the energy to reach that goal. As part of Governor Doyle's task force on climate change, there's a recommendation pending from that report that the legislature, state legislature, will probably take up later this year that would require that to be boosted to 20 or 25%. In addition, the Obama administration in Washington is very much in favor, and Congress is currently working through the details of perhaps establishing a federal renewable requirement for a federal renewable electricity standard, which would really create a level playing field across the United States so that all states are shooting towards the same goal and making the best use of wind energy resources in certain parts of the country, solar energy resources in other parts, biomass in different parts. So really bringing all of the renewable energy technologies to create the clean energy future that President Obama has spoken of several times.
And thanks for that call. Ralph and Little Suamico, we'll go to you now. Hi, Ralph.
Yes, hi. This is kind of a timely program because I had a question. I was hiking yesterday near Ryle Creek. Well, actually, I parked in Ryle Creek. And there, I'm not sure exactly if this is the number, but it looked like there was about 14 wind turbines all kind of in line, three rows. But there was, you know, out of the 14, there was maybe four of them that were turning, and there was a fairly strong wind that day. And I just was wondering why, and I've seen this before in other places, where some of them are turning and some of them aren't turning, why that is.
Hmm. At times when you're looking at a wind project that has multiple turbines, what you are often seeing is, you know, the average large-scale wind turbine, the blades will start spinning in as little as 3 or 4 mile-an-hour winds. So it doesn't take much. They're pretty precisely engineered, well-balanced rotors and blade assemblies. So it doesn't take too much to get them turning. What you may find, though, is that a couple start turning. They're not necessarily yet generating electricity, and it takes wind more like 8, 9 mile-an-hour winds to really kick in the generators in the case where you'd see all of them. And you may think on the ground it's windy, you know, up at the top, conditions could be slightly different. So it really just depends on what the wind conditions are. It's also possible that some could be down for maintenance. It's unlikely that, you know, multiple units at a given site would be down for maintenance. Typically, one is taken down every so often. That would be just that would be responsible really for just one turbine being down at any given time. So it all depends on the wind conditions and the status of the plant itself. Wind plant availability is typically around 98% of the 98%. What that means is that wind projects and individual wind turbines are available somewhere between 98, often up towards 99% of the time, to generate electricity when the wind is blowing sufficiently to get up to that 8 mile-an-hour threshold.
All right. Thanks again for that call, Ralph. Appreciate it. Jeff Anthony, our guest today, manager of utility programs with the American Wind Energy Association. And that group will be hosting the world's largest wind power trade show at McCormick Place in Chicago starting Monday and running through the 7th. Give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking wind power with our guest today, Jeff Anthony. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in, and we'll take some more calls because lots of people are online. And let's turn to Don in Warren, Illinois, is up next. Don, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I can't see Alaska from my door, but I can see a whole batch of 300-foot windmills. They just put up in our area. They're not all already in service. Years and years ago, I read a commentary and an interview with Marcel Jacobs, and he, without an engineering degree, built both 12-volt and 32-volt wind chargers. He found that two-bladed propellers got into a vibration, so he went to three-blade, which the military found out when they got into World War II. He didn't want it to over-rev, so he built a flyball governor and lost a patent suit with Sperry Rand and Pratt Whitney. But we are trying to reinvent the wheel here, I think. he took one or sent one with Bird to Little America. I think that was 35. And when they were down in 56, they dug down. The system was still functioning, and they hadn't done any service work on it in that entire length of time. And they, like the new ones, were generators and not alternators. And he was of the opinion that if we stuck one of these buggers on top of every tower that goes across the steel structures, we could kick into the system.
Well, I wonder about that. Jeff, are you familiar with what Don's calling talking about here with these Jacobs wind chargers?
I'm vaguely familiar with it. It's not something I've studied in detail, but there are a lot of designs out there, and a lot of designs that have been around for a while. Don's correct that some people are starting to look at two-bladed designs again, actually, and there's a lot of interest in trying to find the best technology and the best engineering to improve the productivity and the output. The National Renewable Energy Laboratory, which is located in Golden, Colorado, is testing a number of kind of new hybrid designs and has several prototypes being tested. But to date, the three-bladed kind of large utility scale that most people are familiar with going up, those consistently tend to be the most efficient, most cost-effective, and the most able to produce large amounts of what I would call utility-scale electricity. So there's a lot of research. A lot of new companies are joining our association every day. We're getting 3, 4, 5, sometimes 6 or 7 new companies joining our trade association each and every day. So there's just a tremendous amount of interest. And, yeah, some people are going back and looking at designs that maybe in years past were deemed impractical or too expensive. But right now, kind of the workhorse of the industry, the turbines that most people are familiar with when new projects are put up, such as the ones that Don has near his location in Illinois, are the three-bladed generator design. And that will tend to be the predominant type of wind energy generators going in for at least the next 5, 6, 7 years.
You know, someone sent me an email on vertical turbines. Jay Leno's putting a wind turbine up on his green garage. And the vertical, and there's one in, here, just north of south of Madison, just a little bit too, a vertical turbine, which look quite a bit different from the bladed turbines.
Right. The main turbines that I'm talking about are generically kind of called horizontal axis wind turbines. So the axis, if you can imagine, the spinning part that's powered by the blades is in a horizontal position running a generator in the box that's called the nacelle that's right behind the typical three-bladed design. A lot of people and a lot of companies, I'd say at least 20 if not 30 or more companies, are looking at what are called horizontal axis wind turbines. That's where the axis that rotates is in the vertical position, and there's some design, some type of array of blades or curved surfaces that catch the wind and rotate that vertically. It has an appeal, and that's why a lot of companies are looking at it, because a lot of those companies are looking to place those on buildings or roofs of structures in urban and suburban settings. So a lot of research, a lot of interest. The real problem comes down, as I mentioned earlier when I was talking about someone putting up a personal-sized wind turbine and being careful not to put it near trees, that's the problem with most of the vertical axis wind turbines. It's not a design problem per se, although there are certainly some bad designs out there as well as some more promising designs. But putting a wind turbine on top of your house in a suburban or urban setting or even an office building is probably a lousy idea to begin with, just because the wind resource, anytime you're around other buildings, anytime you're around other trees, no matter how good your technical design is, the wind resource is just lousy. You know, people talk about the Windy City in Chicago, where we'll be next week. Milwaukee is a windy city. But the bottom line is, it's not nearly as windy as if you can put a turbine up out in a rural environment, away from buildings, away from a grain silo, away from trees. That's where the best, most cost-effective wind resources are. So vertical axis wind turbines, rooftop kind of urban turbines, as they're called, some potential there, a lot of interest, but to date, not very economical, not very efficient.
Yeah, this email also had something about a gigantic one that would be something like 1,000 standard windmills. That would be an enormous turbine, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Again, a lot of interest, a lot of designs being tried, but so far nothing's really broken through to compete with the large-scale horizontal three-bladed design that most people are familiar with.
All right. Don, thanks again. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Patricia in Wauwatosa next. Patricia, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you very much. I have heard about them quite some time, and the first thing that I heard was a farmer that had many, many on his property, and he said the noise was driving him crazy. And so I wondered what kind of acreage is needed. Obviously, you just mentioned that it's not good for the city. And then the noise effect that this gentleman, the farmer, had mentioned, and also that many birds were being killed. And so those were my questions, like where would be the proper place to install them, and what kind of acreage is needed, and the noise effect, and then the hazards for animals.
Okay, thank you very much, Patricia, for your call. Jeff, what about it?
Very good question. We get a lot of these questions quite often. In terms of the impacts on birds and bats, it's really quite minimal. There were projects out in the Altamont Pass region in California early on that were a much earlier design of kind of the smaller blades that I mentioned that turned rapidly. Or on the lattice towers, kind of the rather than a single tubular tower, it was kind of the lattice structure you might see on a transmission tower as well. And there were a significant number of raptors killed in the early operation of that project. Today, we understand, the industry understands, a lot more improved designs, taller towers on tubular rather than lattice structures, slower turning blades, careful pre-construction studies, as well as post-construction evaluations to make sure that you don't put projects in, say, migratory flyways. An occasional bird is killed by the average wind turbine in the upper Midwest. The data indicates it could be 1 to 2 birds per turbine per year, but that's far less the number of birds that are killed by office buildings, plate glass windows, automobiles, insecticides. The wind turbines and the wind energy industry have been thoroughly studied to prevent a far less danger to birds than any other man-made objects that tend to kill a number of birds, radio towers, cell towers, and also the impending threats from climate change. So it's really an issue the industry continues to take seriously. Every project gets scrutinized pretty carefully, but it's not as big as an issue that some people believe it is, and certainly not as big an issue as it was in the early days back in the 1970s. On the noise issue, you know, a lot of people who go and visit turbines remark how quiet they are. You know, there was I've participated in wind turbine tours in the past where we always, on the tours, would stop a few hundred yards from the turbines and listen to the traffic noise from a highway a quarter mile away, which is always much louder than the turbines. When you stand directly under the turbine and it's operating, yeah, you hear a definite swoosh kind of noise, and it's not something you would ever not notice. But, you know, homes are typically 1,000 yards away, much farther from turbines, so you wouldn't be standing on them on a regular basis. So the noise issue, it's really not an issue, and the people who complain about it are usually people that have some other concerns with wind projects in general and kind of use that as an excuse. So it's really not an issue generally, and most people, when the turbines are up and running, you know, comment that, wow, the wind rustling through the leaves of trees near my home are much louder than the turbines, you know, 1,000 yards away. So it's really not much of an issue.
The I think Patricia also asked about the acreage required for them. And what about the acreage?
Yeah, it's very important that wind turbines are spaced a fair amount distance apart. But the average wind turbine in a given area uses up very, very little land. In fact, for people farming or having, you know, cattle grazing in the field, they're still going to have 95, 98% of the land available to them. A typical large-scale wind turbine will require about 60 acres per megawatt. So again, if you're installing a 1.5 megawatt machine, then you're talking more like 90 acres. When you talk about that acreage, though, that's really just a matter of keeping a distance from the next nearest turbine in a given project. So out of that 60 acres per megawatt, or for a typical size turbine being installed in this part of the country, about 90 acres, again, you know, the land use impact is very minimal because you're still able to use 95 to 98% of that land. Most of the land that a farmer would lose
is typically to build an access road that might not have existed there before to access the wind turbine during construction and then during ongoing maintenance. So, you know, less than 5% of the land is actually impacted, and the remaining 95% or more is still available for agriculture or whatever purposes. But the main, you know, when we quote that footprint of 60 acres per megawatt, that's really just the area that would be surrounding a turbine, because you don't want to put the turbines too close to each other because they would start, you know, interfering with each other. You need to have them spaced far enough apart so that they're all getting the maximum amount of wind energy to make it a productive project.
All right, Patricia, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Jeremy in La Crosse will give you an opportunity now. Hi, Jeremy. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, and thank you for being here. We're our family and friends, and up here in western Wisconsin, La Crosse area in southeast Minnesota, we're very excited about wind and solar and all these technologies. But maybe I can, and bear with me, my question is a complex one and may take a couple of minutes for us to sort of get into and discuss, so don't hang up on me. But as our country goes from this concept of the coal, most of us, I think, understand that there is no clean coal, and so we're switching into these new technologies, solar, wind, and other burgeoning technologies over the coming decades that I think will transform our country and our world. But the concept, from what I'm seeing, 18 months ago, apparently power industry as we know it collapsed, unbeknownst to many of us. And this whole concept of central station manufacturing of power in, for example, one location, a coal plant or a nuclear plant, and trying to maximize that point of distribution to 100% or 110% of what it's capable of doing, and then shipping that 1,000 or 2,000 miles has proved to be a folly. It just hasn't worked. And the wonderful concept here and with your guest here is now with solar, or in this case wind, we can manufacture much cleaner energy, which is what we're all getting to, and I think what we're hoping to present at Copenhagen soon, is that we need a cleaner country and a cleaner world. The problem, though, that I'm seeing and the question that I ask is, as we go and switch out of that central station, obviously in the Mojave Desert we've got a lot of sun. In the upper Midwest, in the Dakotas and Minnesota and Wisconsin and even Illinois, I believe they've identified 9,000 megawatts of wind. We have windy areas. But wherever we are in the country, I believe that slowly but surely over the next coming decade or two, every city from Alabama to Maine and to California and Oregon and everywhere will be identify what their rich source of what their product is that they can mine, if you will. Here it might be wind, other places solar. Maybe there are other things that can be used elsewhere. My question goes to, how do we now transmit that wind to where it's needed? There's an enormous argument going on in southeast Minnesota and western Wisconsin, from Minneapolis to now Madison, as they build out these multi-billion-dollar transmission systems, CapEx 2020 by XL Energy and Daryl and Power and nine others. There's 11 utilities behind that. There's another one that's supposed to be, and they said that that's going to be about $2 billion, but with the price of steel doubling since they've made the quote, it looks like $4 billion approximately, which ratepayers are going to have to pick up to transmit that power to the Eastern Seaboard. There's another one called the Green Power Express. Some of our friends giggle and call it the Green Wash Express. Yeah, Green Power Express, that's supposed to be $12 billion. There's been a lot of rattle about building out. You have to build these massive central station wind farms or solar farms or whatever, and then ship the power 2,000 miles, which I don't think is the way this wind and solar is designed. In Europe, they're building out towns, and the architecture of the buildings is changing so that it can incur that wind and solar. As you very well said, sir, earlier to the lady who or gentleman who called pertaining to where do you put them, in the city you might not get quite the cleaner wind that you might in a rural area. How do we address the transmissions, especially considering these are not the new grid, the new smart grid transmission systems? They're rushing to put in these multi-billion-dollar transmission systems. I heard from some people in New York the other day who just beat the transmission system they were trying to outlay in New York. How do we go about getting that energy to market? And really, isn't the truth of the matter that we should be having wind and solar and these types of technologies everywhere across America? No.
I'm going to break in there because I want to give Jeff a chance to answer here before we run out of time. I think, Jeff, you've got the essence of Jeremy's question.
Yeah, Jeremy brings up a lot of very good points, all very well taken points. You know, I think a lot of people are pushing for kind of dispersed generation, which is the model that they would see as replacing or superseding the centralized generating station model that Jeremy says. And I think solar power is going to be the big force in that. The concept of making every building and every structure residence in the country a lot more energy efficient to start with, and then using solar to hopefully make it a zero energy structure so that the building itself is generating the power it consumes. That's a ways off, but I think once that comes in the next few years and becomes a reality, that's going to be huge. But we're still going to need large, centrally generated power for some time into the future as we transition over, say, the next decade. And wind power is most cost-effective as a large-scale generating technology. We've talked a lot about small-scale, smaller wind turbines for homes or farms or businesses, but those are really scaled just to provide a portion or maybe in some cases all of the electricity for a given structure. We're still in an economy that depends on large consumption of electricity, and I've got a colleague who is in a utility who was very fond of saying, if you love wind power, you have to at least like transmission. And that's tough for a lot of people to accept because a lot of people don't like the sight of transmission. But the bottom line is the way our economy has evolved, the way our energy infrastructure exists, central generation of electricity, at least for the near term, for the next 10 years or so, is going to be very important. And the question is, do we want to build more coal plants or do we want to build more wind power plants? And our organization has taken a very hard look at the need to build transmission. And some of the projects that Jeremy mentioned are indeed valid projects that are moving electricity from the best wind resource areas of our country where we typically don't live. We typically don't have a lot of people living in the Great Plains, the Dakotas, Wyoming, the panhandle of Texas. And that's where the best wind resources are. So if we're going to move to a clean energy economy in the near term, and we're going to use a greater amount of wind energy, which is exactly what we're on track to do right now, we are going to need to build more transmission. In time, once we can tap into the biomass resources in the southeast part of the country more effectively, once we can get concentrated solar power up and running on a large scale in the southwest, and once we start building offshore wind turbines off the eastern seaboard, off the Gulf Coast in Texas, where a lot of our population centers are concentrated on the coast, you know, we're going to need all of those tools. We're going to need all of those resources. But right now, wind power is the most cost-effective clean energy source of large-scale generation, and we're going to have to build some transmission to get it from where the wind resources are best to where the population centers are.
Jeremy, thanks very much for your call. I want to give some others a chance to get on here before we run out of time. And Dave and Mercer up next. So let's go to Dave. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the show. It's really great, as always. I would like to get for my home, and I got an outside weather station that I've been keeping track of the wind speeds over here since the beginning of the year, and it usually runs between 4 to 10 miles an hour on an average right in that area. Mm-hmm. And my electric bill is usually around $200 a month. Would it be possible to put one up over here?
It's possible. And the organization that you need to contact first and foremost, and Wisconsin is very blessed to have this organization, I know it's been on Larry's show before, is the Wisconsin Focus on Energy Organization, based out of Madison. It's focusonenergy.org. Contact them because they have everything you would need to know and any other listeners on right now who might be interested in installing solar or wind on their property. Focus on Energy has all the tools as well as a lot of incentives and something called a site assessment where they will actually send someone out and take measurements, look at the data you have, look at your energy usage patterns, and give you a report indicating, you know, what your options are. So I would highly recommend focusonenergy.org. The Focus on Energy program is one of the best in the country, and everyone living in Wisconsin is very lucky to have that program here in the state.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Dave. And Jeff and Winneconne, we'll turn to you. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
There's a company in West Dallas called West Dallas Industrial Tool that has 400-watt windmills on sale right now for $499. If you want one, you can go ahead and get one. I'm putting in the two 1,000 watters, which will take care of my house completely. John Deere is running their whole corporation on two 1,000-watt windmills right now. They're building a brand-new corporation with these windmills, and they're using thermal, too, up north in Woodruff area. There's a whole pile of people that are using the 400 watters right now for their small shacks. They're able to just take care of everything. This is a company, West Dallas Industrial Tool, that will give you everything that you need to set it all up.
Hmm. Jeff, are you familiar with that company? Or
I'm actually not familiar with that particular brand. It's worth looking into, and I'll just loop back to my previous statement for the previous caller. Focus on Energy is the best place to go for information on different models, different styles, and then assessing what's right for you in your particular situation, your particular wind or solar needs for your home or your business. So,
let's go back. Thanks again, Jeff, for calling. Let's go back again to the trade show and who might be interested. Certainly, the way it sounds to me, if somebody's interested in getting involved in terms of jobs or careers, certainly be a great place to go.
Absolutely. We're expecting well over 15,000 people, so it's going to be a huge event spread over the 4 days next week down in Chicago. For companies that are investigating getting into the supply chain, in other words, supplying components, parts, or services, it's a rare opportunity where every wind turbine manufacturer in the world will be at this show, so it's going to attract a lot of businesses. We had a supply chain workshop for Wisconsin businesses up in Appleton at the end of March and hope to get about 250 to 300 people. We actually had to close registration when over 600 people showed up for that. So there's a lot of interest in companies in Wisconsin getting into the wind industry as a supplier of products and services. It's a huge growing market. A lot of companies that were former suppliers to the automotive industry are looking for new lines of work, so it's going to be a huge focus of the event next week. But as you mentioned, Larry, for individuals who are thinking of getting into a new industry, want to move into kind of the clean energy economy of the future, so-called green jobs future, this is a perfect opportunity. Even though the economy has slowed the wind energy industry, much like any other industry, we see a huge future once things start to recover. And a lot of companies, if they're not hiring now, are going to be thinking about hiring once things kind of take off and get back on track later this year into 2010. So that job fair is all day Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and our website has details on that. There's special sessions for new graduates, special sessions for veterans who are looking to enter the private sector job market. So a lot happening on that. 54 sessions on various topics, and over 1,200 companies will have exhibits there. So just a huge event. It's actually almost kind of overwhelming. But if you go to the website, you can help navigate your way and figure out what's best for you to attend if you do head down to Chicago next week.
And what's the website?
The website is Wind Power Expo. That's all written together, windpowerexpo.org.
All right. Jeff, a pleasure. Thank you so much, and good luck with the meeting next week.
We'll be pretty busy.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Larry.
Appreciate it. Jeff Anthony, manager of utility programs with the American Wind Energy Association, and that trade show runs the 4th through the 7th, but the job fair runs starting on Tuesday, so it starts on the 5th, so it runs the 5th, 6th, and 7th. But go online to windpowerexpo.org, and you will find out a lot more about it. Coming up, we're going to take a look at shrimp. I love to eat shrimp. Shrimp are a favorite, but I just finished reading an article by Jim Carrier that has brought to mind some of the issues relating to shrimp and the shrimp industry, and we'll be talking with him about that coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.